Hi there, this is Kelly.
Hey, Kelly,
it's Gage.
Kelly, it's Floyd Rathbun and Fallon.
Hi, Floyd.
So, you have the room all to yourself? Sounds like an echo.
I do. Is the echo bad?
No, it's not bad at all.
Okay.
Just worth making an irreverent comment about.
Okay. I'll try to not be too boisterous with my voice.
Okay.
I'm sure once JJ joins us and we approach 9 o'clock, he'll ask people to give introductions.
Well, I'm on. I'm on, Kelly, and I hope it's 1 o'clock, not 9 o'clock, or I am in the middle.
Anybody out there?
Sherm's here.
No, Sherm, how are you?
I'm well.
Good.
Is that Steve?
It is. Staying home?
I am, watching the snow beginning to fall.
Oh, dear. You don't we'll need too much of that.
Well, after our dry January and February, I'll take a little bit this spring.
Sure, man. It is pretty cold and windy here.
Yeah, it's cold. It's going to get down to 22 or 3 tonight in Reno.
That's kind of where we've been, for sure. Need a little heat to make the green grass grow.
Yeah.
All right, Kelly, I've got 1 o'clock. I don't know what your clock shows there.
12:57.
Well, dang it, in Eureka, we're ahead of stuff. Tell you what.
You're closer to that mountain time zone.
Yeah, exactly. So you let me know when you say it's 1 o'clock officially, and we'll get started, all right?
Okay.
I'm doing a teleconference. Can you get me some headphones? Can I use your headphones?
Let's see.
Corey Sondheim on the line.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. This is J.J. Goycochea representing local government. I'm going to call this meeting to order, Sagebrush Ecosystem Council, Thursday, March 26, 2020, at 1 o'clock p.m. First thing I'm going to do is go down through roll call of our members. It's not on the agenda, but we need to establish a quorum. Myself, I'm present, obviously. Mr. McKenzie.
I'm here.
Mr. Biaggi.
I'm here.
Mr. Boyce.
I'm here.
Mr. Lister.
Yes, I'm here, but I'll be in and out this first half hour.
Yes, sir. Mr. Swanson.
Here.
Mr. M.
Here.
Ms. Lacey.
I'm here.
Mr. Malini.
Here.
Mr. Dunkelberger. Mr. Barrett.
Laura Enders sitting in for Justin Barrett.
Thank you. Mr. Raby.
Here.
Mr. Dotson.
Here.
Ms. Ott.
Here, but only for the first hour.
Thank you, Jen. Mr. Krell.
Yes, Mr. Wosley. Jim Lawrence sitting in for Brad.
Okay. Mr. Wosley.
Here.
All right, staff, Kelly, you're here, obviously, Mr. McGowan. Dan?
Yeah. Here.
Katie?
Here.
Kathleen?
Present.
Ethan? Tori, I heard you on the phone, correct?
Correct.
And Jim, we've already got you sitting in for Brad. Okay, with that, a couple of ground rules as we go to public comment. Guys, this is going to be a little bit different. So what I'm going to do is as we go down through this, I will ask our voting members to weigh in if they have any comments after a presentation has been made, questions or comments. I'll try to do that kind of in a order that makes sense. And then obviously if you have anything after that, we will try to weigh in. It's going to be hard, so we're not walking on each other. Members of the public, I'm going to invite you to give public comment here in a few minutes. Please state your name, who you represent, if there's an entity. Same thing with members of the council. Before you speak, please let us know your name so Kelly can try to capture that. We are recording, but it will definitely help with the minutes. And Chris, I sent you a message, but I want to make sure others are aware. We have a situation in Eureka that I'm going to have to step away about 2 o'clock for a little period of time, and at that point I'll turn it over to Chris. I'll just mute you guys so you don't have to listen to everything we're doing here. So with that, public comment. Is there any public comment on the phone?
This is Floyd Rathbun in Fallon.
Yes, sir, Floyd.
I've got just a quick comment. One of the agenda items deals with updating the NEPA process in public agencies, and I hope that Kelly's going to talk about the series of presidential executive orders of 13790, 13807, and 13855, and 2 secretarial orders from Department of Interior, Secretary of Interior, all of which deal with both updating and streamlining NEPA and reducing wildfire occurrence. Both those things are part of that. I also hope that you'll be able to include a little discussion about the use of a categorical exclusion for sage grouse and mule deer habitat conservation that was passed as the Sage Grouse Mule Deer Habitat Conservation Restoration Act 2018. It was part of the 2018 Farm Bill. I would hope that agency folks who are there will help with that, because one of the things that's holding it up, that this is holding up, is the availability of targeted grazing and the availability of outcome-based grazing on Department of Interior lands. That's my public comment is a request for a little more discussion on those topics.
Any other public comment? Public comment? One more time, any public comment? All right, let's go on to approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
This is Chris. Move to approve.
Willie Molini.
Seconded by Willie Molini. Anyone opposed to the approval of the agenda? Motion carries. Approval of minutes, December 5th, 2019. Mr. Biaggi, have you reviewed those, and are they okay by you? You had some corrections on those.
I did, Mr. Chairman, and I brought those up at the last meeting, and looks like they've been addressed. I'm okay.
Okay. Anybody have any concerns on February 25th? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve both sets of minutes.
Mr. Chair, this is Chris McKenzie.
Yes, sir.
I know a lot of effort goes into spelling your name right. I was just hoping they'd put MAC on mine.
Duly noted, Mr. McKenzie.
Thank you, sir. With that, I'd move to approve.
This is Alan, all second.
Anyone opposed? Minutes are approved. Council members, items and correspondence. Mr. McKenzie, anything to bring forward?
No, sir.
Mr. Biaggi?
No.
Boyce?
No.
Lister?
Thank you.
Swanson?
No.
Starla, Lacey, anything?
No, thank you.
Willie Molini?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Kelly, do you have any correspondence you want to bring up right now, or do you wish to wait? Questions get harder as we go along, Kelly. Could be a very short meeting if Kelly's not talking, guys.
Kelly, you're on mute.
Sorry. Had myself on mute. No, I'll wait until the updates. Thanks.
All right, sir. Leave your phone off mute. Let's roll on to number six, review comments submitted to address the proposal by the Federal Council of Environmental Quality to modernize NEPA, implementing regulations submitted March 10th, 2020. Again, these were submitted comments already. Kelly, you want to go over those for review, please?
We need a motion for approval of minutes, please.
Those were done. Minutes were, Mr. McKenzie made the motion, Mr. Biaggi seconded. There were no opposition.
Thank you.
All right, Kelly, number six.
Okay, yeah, as JJ mentioned, these have already been submitted. Most of these you guys have had a chance to see. We went over them briefly at the last council meeting. Very few changes were made to what you had already seen. I think we just cleaned up some phrasing and maybe added a little more clarification to the existing ones, but otherwise they're the same ones that you saw at the last meeting. We did want to make a point that the CCS can possibly help federal agencies when it comes to minimizing the impacts of projects, primarily through this, the siting of those projects, and also that the state now has an approved mitigation regulation, but as I understand it, this proposal to modernize NEPA is more of a statewide or a nationwide effort, and so we understand their challenges with mentioning something like a regulation that's specific to Nevada, but we did feel that it was important to point that out. We also mentioned when it comes to third-party involvement in conducting EISs, that if they don't already, they should consider whether or not that party has a conflict of interest associated with the proposed project. And then the other major one that I wanted to point out was on the effects and being cautious about limiting the scope related to distance or time with a project. Especially if it can be reasonably or scientifically expected that the project may create an impact sometime after the project ends or late into the development of it. So anyway, those were kind of the highlights of the comments that we included.
Okay, and Mr. Rathbun, Floyd, you know, so you're aware these comments were due on the 10th. They were submitted. You know, we all are very much aware of the many orders that have come out, both at the secretarial level and the executive order from the White House. So we are keeping those in mind, and a lot of us are carefully watching where this NEPA goes and are keeping an eye on those categorical exclusions. So are there any questions for Kelly? I'll start with Chris. Any questions on that from you?
No, sir.
Alan?
No, Mr. Chairman, but I'd like to thank the staff for putting these together. They're very helpful.
Mr. Boyce, you got anything, Steve?
I think I'm good.
Bevin, are you still there? Okay, he's in and out, so we'll catch him when he comes back. Sherm, you have any questions, concerns, comments here?
No questions or comments, but it's a big issue.
Starla, anything from you, ma'am?
No, thank you.
Willie?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, how about any of our ex officios? I don't know if anybody from the Forest Service is on yet.
Yeah, okay. Hey, this is Bill Dr. Grisak. I don't know.
Okay, Bill.
JJ, this is Jerry.
Yay, Jerry, you're here. All right, sir, got you now. Do you have anything you want to add on this?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Anybody else? Fish? Anything from you guys?
Nothing. Thanks.
BLM?
just I'll echo that these were well thought out comments that will be helpful in the formulation of this final rulemaking. Appreciate it.
Okay. NRCS, Ray?
No, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Jennifer, you guys good at ag?
We're good. Thank you.
All right. Jim, how about you?
We're good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Tony, you guys good?
Yeah, all good.
All right. Sorry, guys. This is clunky, but I don't know any other way to do it without walking over each other. So, Kelly, I don't think we really need any action here. They've already been submitted. We just kind of reviewed them. I don't see any concerns, anything like that. So those comments will stand on behalf of the Council for NEPA, and we'll continue to see what comes out as a final product. And, again, thank you, as others have said on here. Thank you and the staff.
Sure. We'll keep you updated as we hear more about how they move forward with the proposal.
All righty, sir. Let's go ahead and go on to number 7, review and discussion of comments to be submitted on the Nevada Northeastern California Greater Sage-Grouse Draft Supplemental Environmental Impact Statements. These comments are due April 6th. Possible action. Again, this will be Kelly or staff. I'm not sure who you're going to have kick this off, but go ahead, sir.
Okay.
And Kelly, real quick, just one reminder, everybody stay on mute. We're getting a little bit of an echo, and I don't know if it's just a product of the AT&T line or not, but if you're not on mute, please go ahead and mute. All right, Kelly, go ahead.
Okay, good deal. So once again, I think this is another effort that that we applaud. Anyone that that took a look at the SEIS or the 2019 EIS or ROD that was signed for the land use plan saw that it was over 1,000 pages. So these documents can be cumbersome. But we do appreciate the effort, and hopefully we contribute to addressing the concerns that created the injunction on the 2019 plans. So I'll just go through this and highlight what I think are probably the most imperative comments. To us, not much had changed. There's no proposal of significance that the state had any issues with in the past. However, if possible, and I understand there may be some challenges, and maybe John can speak to this, you can see that a number of our comments revolve around the mitigation regulation that at the time when this was written was cited as an executive order or any proposed regulations. And now regulation that was approved should be codified. I understand that it will be contained in NAC 232.400 through 480. So I'm not sure if it's possible that that land use plan could be updated to reflect the state's regulation, but we did want to make it very clear because it seemed in several areas throughout the document that it talks about voluntary mitigation and projects moving forward, even if voluntary mitigation isn't done. And so our intent was to maybe create some more clarification to proponents, letting them know that while BLM could consider voluntary mitigation, the state will require compensatory mitigation.
So if you want to pause there, Mr. Raby, do you care to address that? Is that something that can be done through maintenance, or what are your thoughts on bringing that up to date?
So, again, John Raby, BLM for the record, and it would be absolutely appropriate to now cite in the final the final state regulation and have that be the appropriate citation. I don't see anything that would prevent that. I have with me Jill Ralston, who's our Deputy State Director for Resources. She's taking notes right now to follow up on that to ensure that the team has that in the final. And if there is, for some reason, which I'm not anticipating, some reason why that cannot be addressed as specifically as I believe is what we would all benefit from, then if in the off chance that is not possible, I'll make sure and come back and let the council know and the reasons why.
All right. Thank you, John. Go ahead, Kelly.
Thank you, JJ. So there were a few other ones. One of the other issues that we wanted to call to their attention, I think it's, you know, in the past they've talked about impacts within sage-grouse habitat, and as we all know, our system also looks at both direct and indirect, and so we wanted to include some language that spoke to even projects that may be sited outside of habitat, their indirect impacts may occur within habitat, and so projects within 6 kilometers of other general or priority habitat also need to potentially mitigate. So other than that, that was really the basis of our comments.
Okay, Kelly, I've got one then. I'm going to start because I'm at the top of the roll, so I guess I get to start. Back up one to that section 2.6, page 2-20, and you guys in red there put and would have no adverse impacts on sage-grouse habitat, et cetera. I've got a little question here in that, you know, the conservation credit system, we specifically excluded emergency activity or routine administrative activity. So why now do we put this language in? Because it makes me wonder if we don't have to have an action or a determination by the SET or this body before that work can take place.
Yeah, and my notes say that Katie was the primary contributor to this comment, and we had a short discussion about it yesterday. And I think what we wanted to point out here is that what's highlighted in red in our comments indicates language that was included in the 2019 plan and is no longer there. And so we just wanted to bring it to their attention as to whether it was intentional to not have that language included or whether it was accidental. Katie,
okay.
Do you have anything to add?
I don't think so. I think you covered it. Our comments there.
Okay, but do you understand why? You know, why, as local government, I want to make sure we don't inadvertently put a step in here, where if we have to go out and do some kind of a maintenance or a repair, if you will, that we specifically didn't want to come through this body, and I don't know, maybe that's why it was taken out in the amendment. John, I don't know, Raby, if you have any thoughts into why it was taken out, but I don't want to make this clunkier. I guess I stumped everybody. Is everybody still there?
JJ, hey, this is John Raby with BLM, and I stepped out for a second to talk to my executive assistant to get a copy of the comments. So I apologize, missed a question if it was directed at me. So hate to have you repeat it, but if you don't mind.
Sure. So do you have our comments in front of you now, John?
She is printing those out for me right now. I do not have the advantage of having those at the moment.
Okay, so I'll hold on. Let me know when you have those. And anybody else have any questions or comments right now, Mr. McKenzie?
I'm going to defer right now. That's all right.
Okay, Alan?
Just for clarification, were these comments are due April 6th? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay. That's okay. That's good enough. Thank you.
Steve.
Are you on mute, Steve? Maybe he fell off. Bevan?
Yes, sir. I just made it back.
All right. Well, we're going over the SEIS comments. Anything you want to bring up, questions, concerns at this point? Kelly gave his update on kind of where they were. I understand you're at a disadvantage because you were off, but anything in particular on those comments you want to bring up?
No. I think they catch pretty much and pretty consistent. Sometimes the wording's a little hard to follow, but yeah, no, I'm good with them.
Okay, sure.
No comment.
Mr. M, how about you, sir?
No, I'm good.
Starla?
I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Willie?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Willie Mullaney. I understand your concerns, I think, JJ, but I favor the addition of that language, and I think a key to it is it says the last phrase, consistent with the state's mitigation policies and programs. So I think it's valuable to have.
Okay, and thank you for that, Willie. And I agree, as long as it's consistent with our mitigation policies and programs, and we're all clear that the CCS excludes those, then I think we're good, and maybe it does help bolster that there are no adverse impacts to the sage-grouse and its habitat. So, okay, anybody else, ex officio members, have anything? I'll go out of order this time to break it up. Mr. Wasley, anything from you guys?
No, sir, thank you.
Mr. Lawrence?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I just want to thank the SET staff for the thorough review of the SEIS and putting these comments together. And it has been a little bit tiresome going through EIS review after EIS review. And I think we were, from what I hear, pretty pleased. Although we do have some comments, for the most part, it does realign with the state plan and how we were moving forward. So anyway, I just wanted to thank the team.
Thank you. Ms. Ott?
I'm good. Thank you.
Mr. Dotson?
No, sir.
Now we'll come back to BLM in a minute. Laura, anything from you guys at Fish?
Nothing. Thank you.
And Bill?
No, thanks.
All right, John, do you have your comments in front of you yet?
I do.
Okay, so what I brought up, the one that's in red there, it's that second block, 2.6.
Correct.
Page 2-20. And so you guys had removed and would have no adverse impacts on greater sage-grouse, the writing in red. And the SET says, you know, did you guys mean to do that? Did you take it out? And as local government, I just wanted to make sure we weren't asking for an additional step to be put in before we could do maintenance on one of our roads or on an existing right-of-way, that type of thing.
Well, the language in red, thinking through that, so, again, that would require some level of site-specific review and a determination that there would be no adverse impact. That's zero adverse impact. So in my mind, what that could lead to is a situation where road maintenance might be occurring and it might have noise-related effects that could, again, be considered adverse by some, maybe not adverse by others. I think having that language in there can be problematic in some instances. I think what folks are really looking at may be, again, more of the long-term adverse impacts, you know, things that may result in habitat removal or degradation that we're all looking at trying to avoid those sorts of things. So what I believe, I mean, again, the reason it would have been removed was to reduce that uncertainty with these routine activities, right? And to have the potential for an additional layer of review that might cause delay on things that otherwise have been ongoing and considered normal operation.
And I agree, and that's the way I read it when I saw it. So, and it, you know, we made an exception, gang, in the conservation credit system. We were very clear, an exception. We're contradicting ourselves here. If we put this in here and it can be interpreted that way, maybe not by Mr. Raby and maybe not by us, but in 20 years it can be, this is going to be very problematic. So I don't like that. I can't support that comment, just for the record.
Mr. Chair, this is Jim Lawrence.
Yeah, Jim.
And I'm just sort of spitballing here, listening to the conversation. But, you know, I'm thinking about it in the context that the state is just definitely more nimble in updating our mitigation plans and policies than the land use plan amendment process for the BLM. And we're trying to make sure that as we move forward, we can keep them parallel. I'm wondering if it is helpful to remove the middle part of the red, take out the would have no adverse impacts on greater sage grouse and habitat, but leave in consistent with the state's mitigation policies and programs. That way, if this body decides that there's important updates to do in this area, it would still be captured. Anyway,
and
just a thought.
I like that, Jim, and I could definitely do that. I've been playing with the idea of how to get away from that adverse impact, and I don't want to put something like permanent or long-lasting or anything else. So I like that, and I could support that. I think, Willie, that would get to you as well. Again, it's consistent with our policies and programs. It protects us. It doesn't undermine us. Are you good with that, Willie?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Willie Mullaney. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that would do the job.
Okay, so anyone opposed if we strike that middle portion of that red out and we just say that it's consistent with the state's mitigation policies and programs? Okay. Well, if there's nothing else on here and no one else has any questions or concerns as I went through the roll, I would...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Bevan.
Bevan, Lister for the record. Again, I'm sorry I missed that discussion part of it earlier. The one question I had in my reading through it, it seemed like we were adding, in one of the early comments, we were adding a 6-kilometer buffer. Am I wrong? Did I read it wrong?
So that... Kelly can go over that again. That 6-kilometer buffer is in there. And it, again, guys, it's part of our policies and part of where we are right now with that regulation. And I know we have some varying views on that, but that's where it is today. But that's the very next section, Bevan. You're right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve these comments with that one correction, if you will, the one amendment to where we struck out and would have no adverse impact on greater sage grouse and its habitat from that red writing in the second comment. Is there a motion?
Does Alan be adding, all approve as amended by the chairman?
Is there a second?
I'll second that. Bevan, Mr. will second that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone opposed? Anyone opposed to that? All right, motion carries. Thank you, guys. Let's go on to review and discussion and comments to be submitted pertaining to the BLM proposal to expedite review of Pinyon Juniper Restoration Projects. These comments are due April 13th. Again, possible action. Kelly, over to you.
Thank you, JJ. So the very first comment in the comment box was just one of support for the categorical exclusion and the efforts to try to ease the process. As everyone knows, an improvement was supported and approved by this body that allowed for PJ removal on public lands as a potential means to generate credits. Having these categorical exclusions, even regardless of the CCS or mitigation, I think is a real improvement. And so I'm not sure it needs to be included in this comment section, but I, I did feel that it was appropriate to applaud the effort that they're making. The second third comment, section 1, page 2, on proposed language, as we had talked about, maybe identifying areas, priority areas for conservation and using some of the mapping tools to help guide. So we were just hopeful that maybe some language could be included that that spoke to some development of areas that could be specified or prioritized for treatment, just to kind of close this somewhat so that about every area that has PJ, but at least from our standpoint of sage grouse conservation, that we could more than likely with the conservation planning tools in the future prioritize areas to ensure the maximum benefit to sage grouse. So that's what that comment specifically relates to. The third comment, page 1, or section 1, page 2, really talks about some additional treatments that may be necessary when PJ treatments are completed, and that would include the potential use for non-native establishers in some of our more dry locations. And also, depending on what's available in the store in the understory, some possible herbicide application to knock down the threat of invasive annual grass spread. So that's what that comment addresses primarily. The next one in section 1, page 2, under proposed language, deals with making some distinguishment between those projects that are being used primarily for fuel reduction purposes or to remove or reduce the threat of fire, that there be some distinguishment between those types of projects where only thinning may occur and projects that are specifically relevant to sage grouse, where we, within our system, we require 100% removal for 100% treatment. So we felt that that was necessary to also make mention of. And then comment 5 is more relevant to the creation of these mosaics on the landscape, and that there be a process that is used so that the design is carefully thought out to maximize the benefit to sage grouse, and avoiding donut hole patches within forests that may offer limited benefits to sage grouse, and in some cases may create sinks. And then the remaining comments are primarily dealing with within our system, we do require complete removal, and that the most recent studies have shown that even single standing trees pose a threat and may create a sink in areas. So anyway, that's kind of the makeup of the comments that we have put together.
Okay, so I'll start through the members on this one. Mr. McKenzie, any questions on these?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of see a tug of war on this between, you know, mosaic or leaving certain portions of the pinyon juniper intact versus kind of what we focus on in sage grouse is the perching possibility. I mean, what's the general consensus for overall basin health versus just focusing on sage grouse regarding clearing of PJ. Is there an answer to that? I know what our preference is, but what's our likelihood of success on those comments?
Oh, Kelly. Yep. Go ahead.
So this is Kelly. I don't know what the likelihood of success of that would be. And I don't want to say that every PJ treatment, I don't want to indicate that every PJ treatment should be the complete removal of trees. But I think that we should be careful in classifying certain projects as being for specific for habitat improvement, when in fact they may not be contributing to the improvement of the habitat if they're creating sinks. I think those types of projects should be clearly identified as more fire-related or forest thinning, fuel removal type projects. But I would think that, I mean, the science is pretty clear that, thinning is certainly helpful in avoiding catastrophic fire and probably give them some ability to fight it and not have the intensity be as high. But there's also literature that indicates that if you're going in and you have a bunch of phase one, and so we're not talking about phase three or in most cases phase two either. We're talking about those areas with primarily phase one PJ growth out on the Piedmonts on the lower elevation slopes where PJ is encroaching into what is been historically sagebrush ecosystems. So, and in those areas, we absolutely believe that where treatment is done as close as is reasonable, 100% of the trees should be removed.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Biaggi.
I'm good, thank you.
Mr. Boyce. Steve, have we lost you completely, sir?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
All right, got you now, sir.
Okay. Just a couple of things. Just to reiterate on the native species, the ability to use those non-natives in there to reestablish the native perennials and get us on the right road, I think is extremely important. But I think it's covered. The only other thing would be the under 220, it mentions the livestock exclusion to some extent. I don't know, Kelly, could you elaborate on that any? I realize there's some peer-reviewed material there, but not completely clear what that means.
And let me know if I don't address your question fully, Steve. I think that to some degree we assume that in most cases the native species are probably more desirable, but we also wanted to mention that in some cases the use of non-native may be helpful in some of the more difficult areas, but
As far as the grazing, though, Kelly, it says study relies on livestock exclusion to some extent, which may not be part of most DX projects. I guess what you're probably saying is just if you went in and reseeded behind the PJ control, there would be some time period of time where there would limit grazing. Is that accurate, or
I see where you're at now. So that was a study that was pretty specific about the exclusion of livestock grazing. in most of the cases where we, at least for sage grouse habitat, we expect the understory.
It was okay.
Hey guys, we need you to mute. If you're not talking, please mute your phone. We're starting to get multiple conversations. Go ahead, Kelly.
Thanks, JJ. Yes, that was a study that was pretty specific about limiting livestock or excluding livestock from a treated area, which may not always be possible or necessary when it comes to phase one treatment. So we were just a little cautious about some of the use of the science that was cited in the document. So that's the point that we were making there. Does that answer your question, Steve?
Well, kind of, but I guess my question would be just, I mean, why mention this? You know, there's documents out there that talk about the benefit of grazing. I mean, as long as we're covering our base here, just to read this, it sounds like that, you know, that we're going along with restricting grazing, which may be needed and may not. I just hope it's clear.
So let me see if I can help Kelly a little bit here, Steve. You know, it talks about the significant science discussed and how it's going to be relevant to the methods. And I think what they were trying to do, the team, is point this out. For example, that study talks about livestock exclusion, but yet we know that if you're not doing seeding and you're just doing some removal, we may be okay. I think maybe the wording needs cleaned up a little bit. Kelly, I think you're trying to give an example of a case where we really want to make sure if we're citing that, which it is, that, you know, this NEPA document is citing that bait study. We want to be sure that we're using it cautiously. I think that's what you were trying to say, is it not?
No, it is, JJ. I'm just not sure it's clear. I mean, why are we mentioning this and maybe not the benefits? It's where I'm at. But you're right. That does clarify.
I guess
the rationale, Kelly, for putting it in there, what would that be in and not, you know, are you just covering your bases? Or?
This is Dan. My focus in that comment was, you know, there's an abundance of science on PJ removal. And, you know, and I was just trying to, I guess, have them better tie in the methods that they plan to use frequently and what that science says. And so just implying there's more nuance to it and that some of the research can better connect to the expected methods to be used associated with this CADX. But so some of the, there's a lot of historical science and I was just asking for it to be better tied to the methods expected to be tied into these projects.
I guess what could happen, Dan, is, you know, you could have a project out there that has key grass and invasive species issue, and grazing is one of the few tools you'll have to control that. And so you sure don't want to take that off the table. I can see in some areas that has a potential, and you're going in there with a seeding where we definitely have to limit some grazing. But, just to read in here, just to throw that in out of all the peer-reviewed research, I guess, is my question. Is it necessary?
Steve, this is Dan again. I did not intend to apply whatsoever that exclusion should occur after these cuts. I was just again seeking kind of more nuance in tying that into the expected methods. And I don't expect the grazing to be excluded after these sorts of projects.
Would you be all right with just taking that sentence out?
Yeah, sweet.
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
That's what I was just going to recommend. It doesn't change the intent any there. So, all right, Steve, are you done? I'll go ahead and continue down the line.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Let's see, Mr. Lister.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, is that you, Sherm?
Yes, it is. And the only reason I'm interrupting, Mr. Chair, is because it relates to the previous conversation. I note in looking at the BLM CX that they do mention resilience seven times and throughout the document, and the concept of resilience is very consistent with the flexibility for grazing management as opposed to the need for exclusion. And maybe we should point that out or suggest that that comment be added to the document somehow that included that increased resilience leads to increased flexibility in grazing management.
Okay, thank you, Sherman. Go back to Bevan. Anything?
Just real quick. Thanks, Kelly. I really support the concept that it be a clear cut, that mosaic. I understand, Chris, your concerns, but in the idea of restoring some of those sagebrush steps for sage grouse habitat, having those tall structures as far away as possible is our best result. And so clearing out and even up into the phase two, as long as we have understory. And that's all I've got, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks, Bevan. Sherm, back to you. Anything additional from you, Sherm?
No, nothing additional except a question. I'm curious. I didn't know that this was in process until I saw it here in the notes for the meeting and the references. And I'm just curious, is this CX proposal something that the SET initiated with our discussion on public lands credits, or is this something that was in process before that conversation?
Mr. Raby, would you like to take credit and answer this question?
So maybe Sherm, could you go ahead and maybe clarify that for me a little bit? That'd be helpful.
Well, I remember in our conversation about pinyon juniper as a potential kind of project for public land credits,
right?
Encountering the situation where proponents of anthropogenic disturbances, because they're already doing an EIS, would be in a position to capture credits for treatments like this because they wouldn't have to pay for doing a whole EIS. And in the conversation, the suggestion was made that, well, maybe we ought to do a programmatic EIS so that that barrier to other people was not a barrier to public land credits. And then 6 months later, we see this CX draft and process, and that relates directly to that conversation. I was just curious if it was started after that, or is this something that was thought of a long time ago and in process irrespective of our conversation?
Well, I'll say this, that the efforts of this this council have quite a bit of influence on national level policy, and that was communicated to the folks that this could provide opportunities not only within Nevada, but outside Nevada as well, to afford the opportunity for potential widespread application of these treatments in a cost-effective NEPA, a low-intensive NEPA manner. I'll just say it that way. So you had some influence.
Wonderful. I thought perhaps we might have had some influence, and I think this is a wonderful result. I think having the ability to do these treatments without getting wrapped around the axle of NEPA is a wonderful thing. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's
thank
all
you.
I have, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Mr. M.
No, I'm good.
Ms. Lacey.
Hi. Chris McKenzie actually had addressed mine, so I'm good.
Mr. Mullaney.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have had some concern expressed to me by my conservation constituents, and I think, and I'm not positive that concern extends from the fact that, well, I maybe shouldn't say fact, but there is some indication that pinyon jay populations are in a downward trend, and I know there is some concern in the birding community about that. However, there is, at least not to my knowledge or at this time, any hard data that would indicate that any population decline in pinyon jays is stimulated by PJ projects. So I frankly, I don't have a big problem with it, looking at the extent of PJ, which is, according to the data I read here and some of this evaluation, that there's 10 times as much PJ today as there was in 1870 or somewhere in there. It's hard for me to fathom that what, in reality, what little PJ is being removed is having a negative impact on pinyon jays or other species. Could be, but anyway, I'm okay with these comments.
Okay. So with that, guys, I'm going to turn this over to Chris. I apologize. I need this phone for a conference call for an emergency situation in Eureka County. So I thank you, guys. I'm in support of these comments. Kelly, I thank you. Thank the team. Sorry, I'm going to have to jump off here, guys. If you'll text me if this ends before I get back on, I would appreciate it, sir. And Chris, the ball is yours, sir.
Let me enter my apologies as we start out. So I guess we left off with Willie. Willie, did you get a response that you needed? Or who are you looking to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really didn't need a response. I just wanted to bring up that there were some people concerned about having a categorical exclusion for PJ removal, but I don't think it's substantiated with science at this point, so I support the...
Okay, thank you. We'll go to the ex officio folks. Bill, Forest Service, do you have anything you want to add?
No, thanks,
Okay. Laura, Fish and Wildlife?
Nothing, thank you.
John? BLM?
Nothing additional. Thank you.
How about Ray?
No comment.
I'm sorry. Are you okay?
That's it. No comment.
Okay. Thanks. Jen? Dag?
No, thank you. And I'm going to jump off as well. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Tony?
I have two comments. One pertains to Council Member Boyce's comments on the bait et al. Reference. I like Council Member Swanson's comments. It's really about the flexibility. My concern is that if there is no reference to the flexibility pertaining to livestock management, maybe not livestock exclusion, but the need for flexibility of livestock management, you know, that could come back as or lack of transparency relative to the comments. So I think that some in there, and I think it would be appropriate to reference the desire for flexibility of livestock management. And then the other comment I had is relative to the discussion pertaining to whether it should be clear-cut PJ. And I think that from a fuel management or a sage-grouse habitat management standpoint, it's pretty easy to make the justification for a clear-cut. However, I think there's a whole host of other species that we need to be cognizant of as well, one particular in mule deer and mule deer's requirements for thermal cover. You know, would suggest that there's some benefits to the mosaic. So I think that should kind of be a site-by-site approach, looking at the other species and looking at the abundance of PJ in neighboring areas. So I think that should really be a site-specific. I don't think that a black-and-white approach to clear-cut versus mosaic would be appropriate, but flexibility there as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
As I recall from Kent McAdoo, ferruginous hawks are another species that often uses isolated pinyon or juniper trees well away from the stand as a nesting site.
So, Kelly, there's 2 points there. On the first, is there another, rather than a specific example, is there a broad statement we can put in to address, the removal of the livestock exclusion language? Maybe we should have some other fortifying language to support the point.
Mr. Chairman, it's Steve.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah. No. I, Tony. I was having a little trouble hearing you, but I would have no problem with some language in there, similar flexibility in livestock management. Where this is now, they're citing a specific paper, and that's what I kind of had a problem with. But if there's some language, we could take that sentence out of there and work in there some language like the flexibility, I would not have a problem with that. Is that where we're at?
Kelly, is that something you can address?
Yeah.
You feel comfortable?
We sure can, and we can share it around with the council members that have voiced an interest in reworking that. That works.
Does anybody have an objection to approaching it that way?
That'd be fine.
Not hearing any. We'll kind of go that route. Then on the second point, Tony, your point is well taken. I guess I'd ask overall, do you, Tony, see these comments as making it the black and white dichotomy that you discussed, would you recommend any softening of language or something we could all work with to make you comfortable?
I'm comfortable with the language that's there. I don't think there's anything that prohibits one or the other. I just kind of heard the discussion going, in a way I was looking for, more certainty or clarification on whether it should be a mosaic or a clear cut, and I think that it should be, determined site by site. I think the comment that's here, mosaics should be designed in ways that are most beneficial to sage grouse and to maintain the best possible aesthetics. Creating patchy mosaics should be avoided. I think that patchiness, it's just an issue of scale. I don't think that precludes any particular approach. I just, hearing some of the comments, some of the discussion, I just wanted to share that there's a whole host of other species out there that rely on these ecosystems, and we could do things that would be beneficial. We could have language in here that's black and white that would create benefit to sage grouse all the time, but it might come as other species, and so it should just be a site-specific determination.
Okay, I take that as we're okay as it reads. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah.
Okay. Jim, I think I skipped you. Do you have anything you want to add on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else I missed? I'm doing my best to keep a little notepad here to cover everybody. Jerry, did I get you? Yeah, I did. I got you. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Willie.
Yeah, I would just like to add, I'm with Tony as far as, and Steve, what Steve agreed to, having some language about the flexibility on livestock grazing post-treatment. And I think Kent worked out, and relative to Sherm's observation about ferruginous hawks, I think that may also be true, as well as Tony's concern about mosaic patterns and mule deer cover requirements. But I think we're pretty clear in our comment that where these are done specifically for sage grouse and to provide maximum benefit to sage grouse habitat, that all of the trees be removed. And so I think I'm okay with that. I would like to see the the flexibility on grazing added back in, however.
Mr. Chair, I think Willie's clarification was quite useful on that. The other related aspect of this is that in this CX, they're excluding old growth, and a lot of those isolated trees are actually pretty old trees, sometimes in what's called PJ Savannah by Robin Tausch. And I think those isolated stands may be well away from the mountain, but of old trees are not ones that we would want to remove for sedge-grouse generally, but we might want to keep them from expanding beyond their original footprint for sage-grouse benefit. And I think that language is pretty much allowed by the wording within the CX as drafted.
Okay. Does anyone, it sounds like we're in concurrence. Does anybody want to take a shot at a motion?
How about the that we approve the draft comments with slight modifications based on the conversation at this meeting?
Kelly, can you do that based on the conversations?
Yeah, we certainly can. And what we'll do is we'll send it out to folks for any additional feedback or guidance they may have, and hopefully meet the needs of the discussion that took place.
Okay, do I have a second?
Yes, Mr.
I'll
Chairman.
Second, Steve.
Malini, I'd second.
Okay, Steve or Willie, one of you put down as a second. Anybody opposed? Okay, it sounds like it passes. All right. You good, Kelly, on that one?
Yes, we're good. Thank you.
Okay, now I believe we're on number 9. Status update and discussion on Joint Chiefs funding awarded to address specific areas impacted by fires and alternative funding sources available to maximize treatments and coverage. Bill?
Yes. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everybody. Bill Dunkelberger for the Forest Service here. Yeah, I'm happy to report that after applying twice to the Joint Chiefs Landscape Restoration Fund last year and this year, we were awarded some funds this year. Unfortunately, we applied for $2 million. We were only awarded $175,000 to address rehab needs on the South Sugarloaf fire area up in Northern Elko County. However, the good news is our Intermountain Regional Office did also leverage that by giving us an additional $480,000 towards restoration up there on the South Sugarloaf and other fires in the Elko County area on the forest. So I'm going to turn it over here to Josh Nichols, my ranger here in a minute, but in general, this amount of funding will allow us to address some of the highest priority needs on the fires, including rebuilding most of the boundary fences for grazing allotments, addressing noxious weeds, and repairing some of the main roads to ensure access. Also, we'd like to think we're going to be using Nevada Division of Forestry crews and contract crews to rebuild fences, and we'll be, unfortunately, probably not be able to cover replacing a lot of the interior pasture fences, but we'll look for funding for that in the future. We're also coordinating with NDF to request some matching funds from SB 508 funding. And I think if Casey's on, maybe she can talk about that here in a minute. And then we're collaborating with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS, and RAISE folks on looking at ways that producers can apply for EQIP funding to replace fences and water developments, even on national forests. So, like maybe Ray can talk about that here more in a minute. But before we do, let me pass it off to Josh Nichols real quick, our ranger up in Elko, with just a few more specifics. Josh?
Sure. Thanks, Bill. So I think most of you guys probably know it was a tremendous amount of fencing and other range improvements that were impacted by the South Sugarloaf fire. So right now we're working closely with permittees to identify not only the areas that we know are important to address, but what their most important fence needs are too, so that we can make sure we target the funding really where it needs to go. So we're looking to hopefully replace 60 plus miles of fence with the funding that we've received so far. And thankfully, some of the fence bids that we did get back were lower than what we anticipated, so we'll be able to stretch that a little further than we initially anticipated. So that's working out well. And I have gotten confirmation that several of the permittees that were impacted up there are in the early stages of working with NRCS to pursue other funding sources such as EQIP. So that's great news. We'll be able to leverage those funds, hopefully, and get even a little bit more done. So it's a very dynamic, kind of evolving situation right now as we're having those meetings and getting things set. But as soon as the snow is gone, we hope to have crews out there completing not only the rebuild work for range improvements, but also addressing noxious weeds and putting in some of those erosion control features to protect roads and other infrastructure. So.
Okay, thanks, Jack.
Bill, did you have anything? I was going to just let Ray, if the members are okay, we'll have Ray and Casey go, and then we can save our questions to whoever you want to address to of the three of them. Is that okay?
That sounds perfect. Go right ahead.
Okay. Ray, if you don't mind.
All right. Thank you, sir. So with NRCS, announcement is going out today. We have $110,000 available for Joint Chiefs for individuals to be able to sign up and take advantage of those dollars. In addition to that, a request has been made for $100,000 for the next two fiscal years coming up, and we're very hopeful that we'll be able to get those funds as well to make them available for folks who have been impacted by the fire and trying to do some of that restoration. Bill and Josh both commented correctly. Individual allotment holders have the rights and the ability, if they meet the programmatic requirements, to utilize EQIP dollars, CSC dollars, and other programs on Forest Service land. So there are some opportunities out there. And also, we are right in the middle of our environmental quality incentives sign-up as well, too. So if you guys could spread the word about that and let some of those folks know, right now is the prime opportunity for them to be submitting applications. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. Casey, you on the line?
Yeah, I am.
Wonderful.
So thanks for having me this afternoon. For the record, Casey, State Forester for Nevada Division of Forestry. So I won't reiterate what's already been said. I'm just going to run through some real quick Douglas High graduate math here. what you heard Bill say was the Forest Service has $481,000 in base funds and $175,000 through Joint Chiefs. What NRCS has is $110,000 through Joint Chiefs, so that altogether is $766,000. What we will ask for through the Senate Bill 508, last session we were given $5 million of matching funds for projects that are for wildfire prevention, restoration, and long-term planning. So we will ask for the full $766,000 in match on this project, which will land us about $1.5 million. So much closer to the second ask of $2 million that we submitted jointly to try to do some good work out there for restoration and rehab. So we're pretty excited about that. That'll go forth hopefully in our June Interim Finance Committee ask, and hopefully we'll be successful in getting those matching funds.
Fantastic. If I can ask the first question, if somebody, have you received much in the way of nonprofits or anybody else making money that would supplement the numbers you were looking at, or are you counting on those separately anyway?
Josh, why don't you address that? I think you did pick up some in-kind donations and some small volunteer contributions.
So we did, and we've been working with a number of volunteer groups and other, you know, nonprofit organizations here to do some volunteer projects up there. So, we've been pretty successful in that score. I think one of the bigger challenges that we've had is just the size of the fire itself. With over 140,000 acres on national forest, there's definitely a lot of work to do. So trying to leverage every dollar and every contribution that we can.
Alan, do you have a question for any of them?
No, I just wanted to say that I'm very proud as a Douglas graduate as well of KC. Well done.
Thank you.
Bevan, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Have any questions for board?
No. Great presentation, and sounds like good things are happening.
How about you, Steve?
Yeah, just a couple things. Josh, I might have missed it. How much, it sounds like you're making some real progress on those fences on the Sugarloaf. What percentage of the total fence are you, do you have plans for to rebuild? I mean, on the bigger picture, how are we going to do on all the fences? What percentage?
Well, right now, Steve, like I said, we have about enough funding to do 60 miles or so, and still waiting to see if the SB 508 money comes in. But there was well over 160 miles of fence that needs replacing. So we're not even halfway yet.
Okay. We're making progress, though.
Making progress.
The only other question, what about water improvements, watering structures, livestock water, game water? Is that part of what you're working on? Can the dollars be used for that? Or is that an issue out there?
So yes to both questions. It is part of what we're working on, and we are allocating a portion of the funding to address some of the more higher priority issues with water infrastructure.
Will some of those go in this year?
Yes.
Good. Very good. Thank you.
Jerry?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Sherm? Sherm, are you still there? Okay. Starla, anything?
I'm still here. Nope, no concerns. Thank you.
Willie?
No, it sounds good. I like to see all those agencies working together, and sounds like they're making progress, so that's great.
Any questions from our other ex officio members? Anything they want to add?
Hey, Mr. Vice Chair, Jim Lawrence.
Yes, sir, Jim.
Thank you. Just a question. I'm not as familiar with this process, and you know, a couple of things. First, it's great that Nevada got funding. Even more importantly, it's always great to hear how the agencies are working together and doing what we do best in Nevada and leveraging our funds and working together. But I am curious, when I did see one press release a few weeks back, although Nevada did get funding, it seemed to be a lot less than other Western states. And not knowing how the process works, I guess my question would be, is there anything that this council or the Sagebrush team or anything that we can do collectively to maybe increase our chances for greater funding in the future?
This is Bill Dunkelberg. I can address that, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thanks, Bill.
Well, Jim, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Unfortunately, the Joint Chiefs program was originally kind of established to do more proactive watershed restoration. It wasn't really initially funded for fire rehab and restoration, unfortunately. So we were actually pretty lucky that we were kind of fit into that category. If you look at most of the other projects, they were more you know, they were restoration-based, but not necessarily as a response to fire. So I think one thing the council could do and probably would benefit maybe the Bureau of Land Management too, but I think we are struggling with, you know, larger catastrophic fires in obtaining enough fire restoration and especially, the long-term rehabilitation money for things like infrastructure and taking care of the land long-term. You know, we seem to do fine on the short-term burned area emergency response. I think BLM does a little better with their ES&R program, but I think it just calls out attention that we need more federal funding for, you know, longer-term fire restoration in general.
And if I might just add to that, Casey here again, I think it would be critical to support future funding sources. From the state's perspective, our traditional funding for rehab is about $50,000 in the state of Nevada. So this $5 million added had a huge impact in how much work we could get done. And so particularly when you're talking matching funds specific situations like this, we're all underfunded for the restoration and long-term rehab funding projects. And so if we all have pots of money we can dip into to help pool together in times like this, I think going forward that will be very beneficial to all of us.
Thank you, Casey, and thank you, Bill. I'm just thinking down the road, you know, if there's anything that the council or the team can do in advance to help with the Joint Chief request, I mean, certainly utilize us. This is important work. And I agree, Casey. I mean, certainly we have work to do at the state level as well to increase the funding, although the $5 million is certainly a nice shot in the arm. Out of curiosity, is the ability to bring state funding or local funding or even nonprofit funding to the table, is that part of the criteria for how much federal dollars the state get?
Bill Dunkelberg, yes, Jim, actually it is a factor, and I think, unfortunately, I think what happened this year, too, is there was some, as with a lot of these funding programs, there was some political efforts made to spread the money to as many states as possible, so I don't think any one state or any one project got as much as they requested for the most part, but we got letters of support from our congressional delegation and I think even the governor's office, and that certainly didn't hurt. But yeah, I think just in general, we there are limited funds for this kind of fire restoration, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And while I've got the mic here, I also forgot to mention, last but not least, but we really appreciate the Nevada Department of Wildlife. They have actually been an outstanding partner, provided a lot of funding and in-kind work, mostly for reseeding burned areas in Elko County especially. So thanks, Tony, for handout.
You bet. You bet, Bill. I just appreciate that shout-out. We, I think, contributed somewhere in the neighborhood of about $30,000 and somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 acres on Sugarloaf, and that was really going to kind of be where my question was about opportunities for match. I know that the fencing, the infrastructure piece is huge, and it's great that Casey's we've got that $5 million there, where she mentioned her budget's normally about $50,000, and we've really had some great partners, not only with our federal partners, but our NGO community. And the last season, we were able to contribute in excess of $3 million to re-veg efforts. So any time there is an opportunity to leverage those funds, partner those funds, and provide match for one another's efforts, count us in as a partner on that.
Great. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Tony. I was going to put you on the spot with those questions you just answered. So, anybody else have questions on this matter or comments?
Hey, Chris, this is Ray. I think one of the best things that we can do, and I think we're going to be able to do that in quick order, is consume
the resources that have been availed to this situation and use that as progress in the future when we apply again and continue to show that vast amount of need that's up there, but what we've done and what we've gotten.
Absolutely. Kelly, do you have anything on this matter?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the presentation, and it's more encouraging than I thought it possibly was going to be when this all went down. So thank you for taking the time and presenting to us. As a board, I don't think we – you bet. As a board, I don't think we have – this is a motion matter. I think it was just a report. So with that, I'd move on to item number 10, review of action items and future agenda items discussed during this meeting and scheduling the next meeting. Do we have – Kelly, do you want to review any matters you have for future meetings or –
So we have the existing list that came from the last meeting. These were items of more significant urgency, but we do have the list that came from the council members from the last meeting that we will intend to get on the next agenda. One will be to review the adaptive management report, so we'll have that on there. And then just to keep in mind as we move forward, so as you might recall, we were hoping to hold a type of a signing ceremony for our first sale transaction within the CCS. And, of course, with the pandemic, I'm sure many of those plans are kind of on the back burner for now. So I'll do my best to keep you up to date as we kind of make our way through dealing with the pandemic. And then just to throw out there that we will need to meet sometime before the end of the fiscal year, so sometime before June 30th, so that you guys can review and approve our semi-annual report to the governor's office.
Okay. Alan, did you have any specific items you wanted to see in the future?
No, I don't.
Bevan?
Nothing right now, thank you.
Steve?
No, I just was hoping we could have a celebration on the credit system, but maybe it can still happen.
Jerry?
No, I'm good.
Sherm? Do we lose you, Sherm? Starla, you there?
I am here, and I'm optimistic as well.
Okay. Willie?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, kind of reluctantly I bring this up. I guess I did it somewhat in jest the last meeting, but I'm wondering if we could have a discussion about adding a representative of the wild horse interests maybe to this council. It may be a bad idea and people could bring that up, but I think it's worth at least talking about.
Kelly, can we put that on the agenda for our future meeting?
Yeah, you know, maybe Jim can help out here a little bit. I'm not sure where, you know, because this was a governor appointed and it's kind of written in the statute as to what members will serve on this council. But I'm not sure that there would be harm in if the council so wishes to discuss that option. Anyway. Anything you can add, Jim?
Thanks, guys. Jim Lawrence, not a lot to add, and I don't have the legislation in front of me, so but to take it with a grain of salt, I'd have to take a look at the legislation and see the specifics.
you know, certainly the non-agency folks are governor appointees. My guess is it would take a statutory amendment to add them as a group to the council. But again, I need to take a look at the legislation and double check on that. You know, that being said, there's nothing that would prohibit the Set or the council from reaching out specifically to a representative of any organization, but in this case we're talking about Wild Horses, that even if they weren't necessarily on the council to do specific requests for either presentations or to attend and sort of be part of the discussion, I think that's something we could do without any legislative changes. To officially add somebody, I'd have to take a close look at the legislation.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Willie Molini again, and I understand that. In fact, I haven't looked at the legislation, but I figured it probably would take legislative action, and there may be too many downsides with it. My only thought, and I'm involved with a group called the Coalition for Healthy Nevada Lands, Wildlife, and Wild Horses, and we're working on a lot of different fronts, and I think we're going to maybe an upcoming meeting of the Legislative Interim Public Lands Committee make a presentation. But horses are an issue out there, and it's an area we're not making much progress, and I'm not being critical of the BLM, because the BLM, I think, knows what needs to be done and how to do it. It's just getting the resources and public support to do it. And I think there's a chance that we might be able to, and maybe not, maybe that's wishful thinking, influence those people, the advocates that don't think horses need to be managed, to have them inside the tent to understand that horses in many cases are a problem. So anyway, I don't know. I think maybe a discussion about it might have some merit, some benefit.
Well, I mean, if we want, we can put it on and discuss it. I don't think we're making any action approving or discouraging or anything by just putting it on an agenda, and we can have that discussion whether it's uncomfortable or not. And at least Mr. Molini has brought it up now officially, so I think it's fair to at least put it on for future discussion, even though it might be a tough discussion.
Yeah, and we can certainly provide some potential options that can be explored and then also have a clear guidance on what the legislation that set this council up is.
Yeah, so I think you run it by the chairman as to what's going to be on future agendas, so you probably double-check with JJ on that. So anyway, we brought it up. We'll see what determination's made on that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is Jim Lawrence again. Sorry to interrupt. I did bring the legislation up. The way I read it, if there was an entity to be added as a voting member, then it would take legislation to change the statutes. The governor does have the ability to appoint non-voting members. In fact, and that's the ex officios. And it does say any other member appointed by the governor as a non-voting member. So for what it's worth, just throw it out there.
Thanks, Jim. How about setting a time and place for our next, place is going to be on the phone likely unless things change, but a time, date and time for our next meeting? Do we want to go out to June, or do we want to have one sooner? You mentioned we needed one before June 30th. Do we want to wait till June? Are we okay with doing that, Kelly?
Unless something pressing comes up, I don't see why we couldn't hold off until June. And so the second Thursday of that month is the 11th of June.
Anybody have any problems with the 11th of June at this point in time?
Yes, this is Alan. I do. Mine Expo is in Elko that week.
Okay. You know what, Kelly, this might be easier to do with the MailChimp thing if you can.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the...
Yeah, I can send out a doodle poll.
Okay. That'd be great. I think it'd be more efficient than trying to do it here on the phone with everybody. That's all
okay.
Right.
Yep, that's fine. And then, like I say, I'm still hopeful that we are going to have some sort of a ceremony for the sale. But I'll just kind of keep you guys apprised as to when and if that might occur before then.
Sounds good.
Mr. Chairman, Willie Molini, being optimistic, maybe the later we go, the better the chance we can meet face-to-face.
With the unknown, I think, you know, June, mid-June, somewhere in that time frame, as long as it gives enough time for SET to get their report done and make changes, that probably makes the most sense in that time period. So you'll work on that, Kelly?
Yes, I sure will.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to federal agency updates and comments. Laura, Fish and Wildlife Service, do you have anything?
Hi, yeah, just a couple quick things. One, just want to let everyone know the status. We are still very much open. We are mostly working virtually. So the majority of folks in our Reno office are teleworking. That's generally the case, Fish and Wildlife Service-wide. We do still have folks present for law enforcement, our national fish hatcheries, things of that nature. But everybody should be available via phone and email. I'll let John Raby speak to our building access as we're in the same building. Two quick updates. First, I believe Justin Barrett mentioned on the previous meeting, the Fish and Wildlife Service is soliciting information through our migratory birds program regarding common ravens. If you go to, I'll give a web address, fws.gov/regulations/raven, and we're soliciting information to basically assess the scope and scale of conflicts with ravens in the western U.S., and through that process, we'll then be looking to develop a large-scale strategy for ravens across the Fish and Wildlife Service western regions. That link I provided does have a short pre-recorded webinar you can watch to understand more about this, but comments are due March 31st, so next week. Again, that web address is fws.gov/regulations/ravens. /raven, no F. If you have questions, please reach out. Final thing is the listing decision for the bi-state sage grouse is due April 1st. Our expectation is that a rule will publish on March 31st in the Federal Register. And that's it. Let me know if you have questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Laura? Not hearing any. We'll go to BLM. John?
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. For BLM, we are currently with this COVID-19 pandemic crisis. We are in full implementation of our continuity of operations, and what that means is right now we have about 70% to 80% of our 1,000-employee workforce statewide that are in a telework status. Depending on the office location, there's minimal staffing. Typically, the district manager, maybe a field manager, and some key staff that are in support of mission essential or mission critical functions are continuing. We are continuing with our core work, and I've defined that as the mission critical work that is all part of our annual work plan. So things like, again, grazing permit renewals, NEPA work that's in support of either restoration efforts or mining efforts, major projects, those are all continuing on. And we have posted a number of things in the Federal Register as well as had public comment periods. And as you can imagine, we are getting some feedback about wanting to extend public comment periods, and we may do that. Dependent on the project and the amount of public feedback we do get. But we are continuing on with as much as we can in as normal a capacity as we can, given a very abnormal situation. We are also doing some minimal level of field work, but that all has to go through a risk assessment and has to have the all the mitigation in place to allow that work to be completed safely. At this point, not seeing any major disruption to our projects or activities, as folks have reported out on me that things are moving forward even in this time of significant challenges. We have had to limit public access to certain areas to ensure we're amplifying the governor's message on Stay Home from Nevada, as well as the limitation on gatherings over 10 people. And so that means some of our recreation sites and facilities have had to be temporarily closed until the situation passes. We do have other areas for dispersed opportunities for folks that they can get outside without having large gatherings. So, again, our offices are across the state are closed to the public. They are open to our employees. We only, in the state office right now, we typically, between us and Fish and Wildlife Service, we have about 250 employees in this office building, and right now we have about 15. It's a very skeleton crew, but people should be responding to phone calls and email messages and again, continuing with our operations through our continuity of operations. So that's it from me, pending any questions.
Thanks, John. Any questions from the board? Okay, not hearing any. U.S. Forest Service. Bill, you have anything to add?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Pretty much what John and Laura have said, the Humboldt-Toyabe National Forest offices are all closed to the public. We still have minimal staff working in the offices, maximizing telework for folks. For customer service business, we're still available on email and phone, and we're still conducting things like annual operating instruction meetings virtually with permittees. We are also, law enforcement and our fire suppression folks are still working, and so we're looking at our core mission too. So that would be pretty much what John said. We're supporting ongoing mining projects and grazing permit issuance, AOI meetings, et cetera. Still looking at doing habitat restoration when we can get out in the field, and fuels reduction. And one thing I was going to mention, the Shared Stewardship Executive Committee has met. We did form a technical team to work for that committee to come up with recommendations on where to prioritize mostly large landscape fuels treatments. And that could be potential report out for the SEC at a future meeting, since there's a lot of overlap with what the SEC is doing, and most of us on the SEC are involved in the Shared Stewardship Committee as well. The only other thing I would add is actually just this afternoon, at the request of the governor's office, I signed a forest order that prohibits gatherings of groups of more than 10 people on any of the national forest lands on the Humboldt-Toyabe in Nevada, not California yet. We'll see. We haven't had a request from folks over there yet from the governor, but and we do have a few of our recreation sites, concentrated use areas are closed to the public completely, mostly down in Las Vegas and the Spring Mountains. Those were really about the only ones that were open this time of year. But yeah, we do support people recreating on the forest, but in groups smaller than 10. So if you need a mental health break and some fresh air, still encourage folks to get out there just in very small groups. That's all I got. Most people have questions.
Thanks, Bill. Questions for Bill? Not hearing any. NRCS, Ray?
Hello. The EQIP sign-up deadline is April 10th, so please help share the word. We are still taking applications. They can be emailed to us. They could be mailed to us, and we're going to be setting up a feature, hopefully in the future, to be able to take them by telephone. When it comes to the new hires that we have in the state, Jim Gifford, who is the district conservationist in the Minden field office, was selected as the state resource conservationist today, actually. And the start date hasn't been submitted, hasn't been agreed to at this point, but he will be coming on as a state resource conservationist. Anthony Bush has been hired as the state biologist. We're getting Anthony from Arizona. He works for the Tonto National Forest in an agreement with Arizona Game and Fish. And we're going to be advertising that one a month of DC job because it's going to be vacant now. And we also have an advertisement out right now for a district conservationist position in Winnemucca. And it also has a $10,000 recruitment bonus associated with it. And the last thing that we have is we're going to be rescheduling the SAC meeting and also the NRCS 101. And we're just going to have to do it all by telephone conference call. But we still want to try to be as productive as we can in these times where we're practicing social distancing. And that's all I have for you guys. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Ray. Any questions for Ray from the board? Not hearing any. Anybody else on the phone for other federal agencies? Okay, we'll go to state agencies. Item 12, Office of the Governor. Don't believe anybody's here. Jim, do you have anything? DCNR.
Yes, thank you. Jim Lawrence. You know, a couple of things along the theme of the afternoon. DCNR, we are, you know, obviously following the governor's directives. Last week, we did close our offices to the general public, but we are keeping our functions and services going during this time. Most of it's through telework. We had a goal in our Bryan building, our DCNR is in Carson City, which is about five stories. Our goal is to achieve about a 90 to 95% telework, which we have pretty much done at this point in time. We have all of our divisions with schedules to make sure that we're adhering to that. So we are keeping our businesses going. Most of the folks that are working are kind of along fiscal services or leadership in order to keep day-to-day activities happening. We are accepting applications or information at the front door of the building. We have phone numbers posted, and then folks can make a call to the appropriate division, and then we can pick up any documents at that point. But the building is closed to the general public. With our Division of State Parks, we made a decision early last week.
Did we lose you, Jim? Jimmy, did we lose you? Sounds like it. Tony, you still on? Department of Wildlife?
Yes, sir, I am. Just a couple things. I would say that our operations pretty much echo the operations of all others. All of our offices are closed to public traffic, but we are maintaining all of our business operations, essential functions, manning a call center. Our big game tag application period is presently open, and we're providing assistance to people that are trying to log on and apply there. We kind of followed state parks model and did close down our wildlife management areas that were being used for, you know, camping purposes. So we were able to close all those facilities down. We still have our law enforcement folks in the field. We're still operating our fish hatcheries, mainly just to so we don't have catastrophic losses in those facilities where you have significant investment in the fish. We've curtailed to the point of non-existent our sage grouse let counts or trend grounds where we have significant
data, you know, trend data. That'll just highlight the importance of the data on vital rates that we collect through harvested birds. And I know that that has been an issue of debate in the past, why we can harvest a bird that garners so much attention and has so much conservation need and priority placed on it. And again, I'll just take advantage of this opportunity to say, absent trend ground data, the only data that we're going to have any meaningful data on vital rates, meaning nest success and chicks per hen, will come from the less than 3% of the population estimate that is sport harvested and the collection of those wings. So it's very important data for the management of this species. It gives us indications of how this bird is responding to all these habitat treatments that we're talking about, all these anthropogenic disturbances or, you know, fire, those sorts of natural catastrophes as well. This is the insight, the only insight that we may have this year. Also, just like to give a big thanks to the Fish and Wildlife Service for allowing us to provide as much input and data relative to the proposed rule. The rule that Laura referenced on the bi-state, hopefully by this time next week, we'll have some good news there. We're optimistic. We have our fingers crossed that will be a favorable outcome. So we'll sit tight and wait for that to be published next week. And certainly be willing to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tony. Any questions from board members for Tony? Not hearing any. Jim, did you get back on?
Yeah, I did. My apologies. My phone dropped. I was able to get back on when Tony was giving his report and talking about state parks. I was just about wrapped up. I can talk more about state parks, but maybe Tony covered it already. I don't want to be redundant.
I think he covered it. I mean, it sounds like closure of campgrounds.
Yeah, and that's it. We closed the campgrounds real early on last week. We've also closed, like, visitor center facilities and the group areas for picnicking. We've closed those down as well. I think one of our challenges moving forward is following the directive of no more than 10 people congregating. You know, some of our parks, whether it's the new East Shore Trail up at Lake Tahoe or certainly Valley of Fire State Park down south, we're seeing a tremendous, even more than usual, uptick in visitors. And so it's going to take some constant monitoring to make sure that those areas, one, they just don't get overused, and two, to make sure that folks are following the proper procedures and being safe at this time. And that's about it. The other thing I was going to mention is we did get some inquiries and requests from environmental organizations to basically put on pause review of water pollution control permits and renewals and also air quality permits, mostly in the area of mining. You know, the request was to put them on pause, you know, during this time. You know, we are not doing that. So there is going to be some workshops that we're going to put on pause, like regarding the team's buckwheat, put that on for a little bit because we want to make sure we can hold public workshops. But for the day-to-day regulatory water quality, air quality permits, we're still continuing on with those. And that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Questions from the board for Jim? Not hearing any. Okay. Department of Ag, I think we lost them. Conservation districts, anybody on the phone?
Yes, sir. Zachary Ormsby, heard about conservation districts. Really wanted to say that the CD meetings have been put on temporary hold throughout the state and that the program will be discussing our role in the adaptive management plans at the next State Conservation Commission meet, along with furthering discussions with the SEC to understand how we can facilitate moving forward with that. And also, I think worthy of mention to address Willie Malini's comments earlier,
is that Kevin Shoemaker's lab at UNR is conducting some research on PJ removal effects on non-target species. It might be worth reaching out to him and see if he can be part of future discussions or give a presentation on his research to this body. And that's about it. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Zachary. Any questions from the board for Zachary?
No, then Willie Molini, thank you for that information. Is he with the Natural Resource School up there?
He's in the College of Agriculture, Biotechnology, and Natural Resources, Kabner.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Anything else for Zachary? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Seth, Kelly, you got some, I'm sorry, you got something else?
Just a thank you.
Okay, thanks. Kelly, what do you got from the set?
Well, I'll avoid redundancy with all the office closure and staffing and stuff like that. I've bombarded you guys enough with emails kind of laying out how but did want to provide an update that if this continues, it could have an effect on our verifiers doing field work for both the credit and debit projects, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. If field data is not able to be collected, did I drop off?
No, I think you're still there.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So if...
not unless you nodded off.
Not yet. So if field work is not able to be done this year under the window that we have of April 15th through June 30th, that may create some issues, and we may have to have an emergency meeting as to how we can address that. That would be different than what is lined out for our protocol within the manual. But we'll just kind of keep an eye on that and see how things proceed. And then I just wanted to bring up, so I thank Caleb from Endow from the Eastern Region. They submitted a bunch of just kind of fire updates, fire rehab reports. And I found it really interesting. He didn't have all of them at the time, but I thought it might be worthwhile to send out to everyone and maybe even at some point in the future, Tony, maybe have a presentation on those. I think it's worthwhile information and gives a pretty good idea of just the kind of effort that's being made out there on the case of Endow when it comes to fire rehab work. So, and other than that, that's it.
Questions for the board for Kelly? Not hearing any. Okay. Any other state agencies out there on the phone need to make a report? Not hearing any. Okay, we'll go with public comment. Please identify yourself. You have something to bring forward now. Doesn't sound like anybody's rushing to take advantage, so is anybody left out there to make a motion to adjourn?
This is Alan, so moved.
Second.
Second from Willie. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you for everyone. I know this isn't the easiest circumstances. Thanks for all your hard work moving forward.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Hi.
Your conference is ending now, as requested by the host. Please hang